Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch, did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snapple's Identity Refreshing!
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I am David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. Yeah, I know it's Super Bowl weekend. We're talking baseball today, and today is a big one. In the ongoing work stoppage, the game needs Commissioner Rob Manfred to step up to the plate with the bases loaded and do anything but strike out, Bruce. It is Super Bowl weekend. We are here for you. Good morning, buddy. How you doing?
Good morning, David. It's a big day. The confusion of the Commissioner of Baseball and who he represents, that comes into play again after we saw his press conference yesterday. And the idea that indeed there is a divide still between the players and the owners, but maybe the divide isn't as big as everybody was making it over the last couple of weeks. We are getting down to the nitty-gritty time with spring training set to open on Wednesday, and something has to be done over the next 10 days in order to get a deal done, not miss spring training with at least 4 weeks involved, David, and have opening day begin on March 31st.
Aside from the calendar, Bruce, and we will get into this throughout the show, we've got a great one planned, but I feel like the tone was set. The pressure was almost put on Rob Manfred by the comments and the tone that he took on Thursday after the owners' meetings when he met with reporters, and he sounded more optimistic and maybe more willing to concede or compromise than I think at any point throughout this work stoppage that began way back on December 2nd. Would you agree with that? And to you, does that put even more pressure or make today even more important?
Well, I think it is a huge day today, David, and he did give us some news. I mean, he did say that the sides are in agreement. That's the first time we've heard anything about agreements whatsoever since December 2nd when the lockout went into place on Universal DH. So, number one, every National League team, David, now realizes that, yes, if they're interested in a DH, a type of player that really doesn't have a position, if you want to look at a Nelson Cruz, if you want to look at a Kyle Schwarber in that way, all of a sudden 15 teams in the National League will be alerted. This is a time we can move on a DH as soon as this deal is done. So universal DH has been agreed upon. No free agent compensation when a free agent leaves and teams normally have the chance to sign a player from another team because of the fact that they have signed elsewhere and they get a free agent compensation pick. That's not going to happen anymore, creating more of a free agent market without any hesitation for teams. Also, a new drafting system where it's not necessarily the worst team that gets the number one pick in the draft. That is also a part that's been agreed upon. Now, getting the final solution to a couple of these things and then the more important issues in competitive balance tax and wages for young players, that is the charge of both sides, David, as they peruse and listen to the owner's latest proposal that will be given out today.
We're going to talk about all of that today. We've got a great show coming up. Bob Nightingale from USA Today will join us from New York at 9:30. Just the latest on the talks and what he thinks is going to happen and what he will hear later today from Rob Manfred. At 10 o'clock, welcome back Ron Coomer, Coom Dog. He's going to join us at the top of the hour. And then Ryan Horvat from BetQL Network will talk to us at 10:40 this morning, Bruce, about some Super Bowl picks, some hey, we have to remember what everyone is looking toward this weekend with tomorrow night looming for a lot of bettors. Inside the Clubhouse right here is brought to you by Aloha Restoration, restoring your home to pre-disaster conditions. And, Bruce, I want to get back to what you had to say about the universal DH. There are a lot of implications we'll talk about throughout the show. But what was your immediate reaction? And maybe other people out there have thoughts as well. 312-644-6767. When you saw the universal DH, that kind of concession being made or announced by Rob Manfred, who does it immediately affect in your mind?
Well, it is a big boom for players because the limited player in baseball, the guy who really doesn't play a position anymore, a Nelson Cruz, for example, as we brought up before, had 15 teams to negotiate with up until this announcement was made. Now you have guys like this, and you look at, let's take Schwarber, for example, a guy that maybe doesn't fit for the Chicago Cubs before this announcement is made, now automatically fits into the conversations about, well, we need left-handed power. We don't have enough. Kyle Schwarber, we know his makeup. He's a great guy. We don't necessarily want him in the outfield or at first base, but if we can have 600 at-bats from him and 450 or 500 are from DH, that's a new equation that teams are open to now. And it also benefits players because you have 15 new jobs that are, in general, high-paying jobs for the DH. Now, people use them in different ways, but in this case, it opens up more revenue for players, more jobs for players, higher salaries that are escalated automatically by having 15 more DHs, possibly, in the National League.
That was one of the things that got a lot of attention when Rob Manfred spoke the other day following the owners' meetings, but it wasn't the only thing. I think, as we alluded to, he sounded like a commissioner more in the spirit of compromise in terms of making concessions from the owner's side.
You're always one breakthrough away from making an agreement. You never, I mean, that's the art of this process. Somebody makes a move, and that's why we'll make additional moves on Saturday, that creates flexibility on the other side, and what seemed like a big gap on this topic or that topic isn't such a big gap anymore. So it's just, it's hard for me to answer that better than that.
The positivity, David, of Manfred, cautious optimism is the way I would look at it. A guy with a little bit more, hey, I'm a regular guy. Us owners are regular guys. We're trying to get a deal done for you, the fan. That's what I sniffed out of this conversation.
Two questions for you. Sincerity or spin? And then second to that, how much of that tone, which seems to have shifted, I would agree with you, is in direct relation to the fact that the players on the other side appear to be very unified? I think social media has given them a way to communicate their message cohesively, and they are unified, as we have heard from Gerrit Cole and Max Scherzer and others. And I think that has, in my mind, almost affected the way that Rob Manfred and the owner side have to approach this, because they aren't dealing with a side that they're going to break, because the players aren't going to be splintered here.
Well, you know, we've heard this in every labor dispute before, David. It's not unique. So I don't get much of a good feeling from players coming out saying we're unified. You know, it's been 75 days since the lockout. Of course they're unified right now. And of course, you know, not being sarcastic, but being realistic about it, David, no one's missed a paycheck yet, okay?
Right.
Right.
When you start missing paychecks on the player side, when you start missing fans in the stands in spring training and the owners' cuts and their partners in Arizona and Florida that look forward to spring training and set up their these cities beautifully for the teams, that's when it starts to hurt. Okay, when they get hit in the wallet, that's when it really starts to make some sense. So I don't take much from the players being unified. As a matter of fact, the more I hear from players or owners saying we've made, you know, we're unified, the less I think there's been any progress.
It's honestly easy to be unified when you can still make your payments on the Bentley. Is that what you're trying to say, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean, they don't all make Bentleys. You know, the whole idea here is your average major league career is 4 years, okay? Right. In that time, an average major leaguer probably could make upwards of $2 million. That sounds like a ton of money to us, okay? But for the lifestyle that major leaguers live and for the lifestyle that they propose that they will have the rest of their lives, the people around their lives live a little bit bigger than they normally should. So that $2 million isn't going into the bank. That $2 million is being spent with the idea that they're going to make a hell of a lot more the rest of their career. The reality is it's 4 years. So the minimum salary is a huge thing for the union. Salary arbitration being earlier for players, that's a huge thing in this discussion. And the competitive balance tax at the end and the taxation after teams go over a certain amount of salary per year, those are the huge issues in this CBA.
And Bruce, you talked about how Rob Manfred had gotten specific about the calendar and the implications and when a deal would have to be struck and what that would mean in terms of the reporting date and also the beginning of opening day. Nobody wants to lose games, and this was how emphatic Rob Manfred sounded about that possibility on Thursday.
If I hadn't given consideration to what it would mean to miss games, I wouldn't be doing my job. Obviously, I pay attention to that. I see missing games as a disastrous outcome for this industry, and we're committed to making an agreement in an effort to avoid that.
Yeah, I mean, like that is the different Rob Manfred that I heard. Okay, it's a calmer, we need to get a deal done. It's on me to make sure that this gets done as commissioner of baseball. We don't hear that very often because we realize the commissioner of sports now are really the CEOs of those owners. They're not really the representative for players. Yeah, they hand out fines and they have people that work for them and do those things and do what's best for baseball. But in reality, nobody is fooled that he represents the players. He doesn't. He represents the game through ownership, and that's it. But I do like the tenor of his voice. I do like the idea that he feels it's on him if the season doesn't start on time, that it's a bad look for everybody. So I think that type of rhetoric gives a feeling of there might be something done. And when it does get done, we have to react very quickly because he said right away, David, we need to have 4 weeks of spring training, no less. We learned the lesson from 2020 when our pitchers were going down in droves because we only had 3 weeks of spring practice in spring training 0.20. And we need to have 4 weeks. That means, David, 4 weeks means that they have to have a deal done by February 20th. They have to have players report by 27th. And that gives them 4 weeks of time before the 27th of March, or 28th of March, when they have to leave for the beginning of the season on March 31st. So it's a very thin line here. This next week, today's results, this next week in negotiations, it has to be one of those where we're not hearing every other day they're going to meet. They're going to have to sit down and get something done.
That makes today the biggest day of the offseason to date, because I think that it was a constructive dialogue that began on Thursday. You hope that continues today in New York. We'll talk to Bob Nightingale at the bottom of the hour from USA Today from New York. But, Bruce, that's the biggest national story certainly in the game. A couple local things I want to touch on in the opening segment, because I think it's important. Last night, ESPN reported that the White Sox are mandating COVID-19 booster shots for all minor league players. The minor league camps still are getting ready to convene and open. And the Sox are telling players in an email Friday they, quote, will not be able to participate in spring training without being fully up to date on their vaccinations, according to the letter obtained by ESPN. You have some more information on that and talk to some Sox officials about what that means.
Right. This is absolutely accurate, and it's absolutely the way the White Sox have done business up to this point. Okay. All of their players had the same vaccinations last year. As you know, the White Sox, as they say, knock on wood, had a very good record when it came to COVID-19 and not getting the illness. So, they did a very good job. Major League Baseball is not mandating that minor league players have to get their third shot. The White Sox are. So will there be any pushback? I don't think so. I believe that all the White Sox minor leaguers understand that this is a part and parcel of keeping them healthy, keeping the environment healthy, doing it the White Sox way. I wouldn't be surprised if other teams step up as well, but the White Sox are not shy about it. And if somebody wants to fight them in court, they can go ahead and do it. Maybe they end up playing on a different team in 2022.
Exactly. I mean, you know, what are you going to fight? A team trying to act in your best interest? A team trying to fill its clubhouse and organization full of healthy players, taking advantage of everything at their disposal? I think it's good for the White Sox. I wouldn't be shocked, Bruce, if more teams, if not every team, does this by the end of spring training.
Right. But again, you know, people will say, well, you know, in the country, there's still 30% or a little bit more of people who haven't gotten their vaccine. Why should these players have to do it if they don't want to? But again, you're talking about a system, a group of people together all the time, a way that the White Sox feel this is the best road to staying safe, healthy, and having a season that's uninterrupted by the virus.
And playing professional baseball is a privilege, not necessarily your right. So you are choosing to do this. You have to do the things that come with those choices. All right, I mean, Bruce, so the Cubs.
I'll finish with one thing, David.
Okay.
Sorry to interrupt you. But this starts with Mr. Reinsdorf, and it goes all the way through. That's how it goes. So,
meanwhile, the Cubs are in talks with Sinclair Broadcasting. Bruce, you know a little bit about what's going on. And Marquee, the suggestion is that they are talking about launching a streaming service for customers who don't have cable, basically cord cutting. And it would cost Cub fans $18 a month, according to the New York Post, as much as that, to watch their beloved team. I know some Cubs fans who last year would have, you know, paid somebody $18 a month not to watch games, but where is this headed, and what do you think about the direction?
Well, first, Major League Baseball is not in approval of individual teams right now streaming. The Cubs are not near, and Markey, from what I understand, are not near streaming at this point. It's not going to happen in 2022. The $18 figure is an arbitrary number that was just brought up. It's not anything that's set in stone going forward. That's not necessarily the figure at all of what people would pay if streaming is available to them. And again, it's not going to be this season, so people shouldn't get riled or upset about the fact that you know, they're going to lose you know, seeing the Cubs unless they're streaming individually. The deals are still in place with the cable companies, you know, so there's a lot to be done here. I can tell you that streaming is a part of the future for Major League Baseball games, and Major League Baseball wants to be able to control that, to add that to their revenue streams for all the 30 teams, rather than each individual team going off and starting their own streaming service. So there is a fist fight to be had first between teams who are interested in streaming and MLB. Once that's solidified and taken care of, then we'll see more news about this going into 2023.
It does raise the question, how much is too much? What would you be willing to pay per month to watch your favorite team to cut the cord and to say, is it $15? Is it $18? Is it higher than that? 312-644-6767. What do you think? Bruce, the Score listener lines powered by BetQL. Bet smarter. Beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. We go out to the phone lines, and that is where we find Mike, who is in Glencoe. Good morning, Mike. Welcome inside the clubhouse.
Hey, fellas. And I'd like to talk about something other than the strike. Bruce, earlier this week, Keith Law, who I know is a controversial guy, listed his top 100 farm systems, and the Sox are right back where they used to be, right dead at the bottom. And a lot of the comment was, oh, no, this is no big deal. This is just because we have all these great players that came up to the majors and will reload. But is it fair to also observe that maybe we have not done a good job the last couple of years, that we're still lagging player development and we have not restocked the minor league system? I just don't buy the excuse that this is all because we've brought up these fabulous guys to the majors and we're reloaded and ready to keep the farm system pumping away. What's your view?
Well, I think they've done a really good job of player development. And player development is not just signing players and getting them to the major leagues. It's about identifying good players from elsewhere, David, and trading for them and then bringing them and developing them. I don't think anybody's done a better job of trading for young players from other teams and developing them, getting them to the major leagues, signing them to unbelievably long high-paying contracts. You have left field, you have a center field, you have third base, all young players who were traded for, developed and signed to long-term deals. You have a shortstop who was a number one pick who was signed to a long-term deal. You have young pitching in the organization that is coming along. So from my perspective, I think they've done a really good job, and I think it's just the way it goes when you become competitive. And the White Sox are in that arena right now where they are competing to win a World Series every year and will be for the next 3, 4, or 5 years. So from that perspective, I can't worry much about the minor league system right now.
I am with you, Bruce, and I don't think you want to be last in anything, but I don't look at the White Sox and the way their young players have performed and been part of this movement toward making themselves into a World Series contender and think, boy, that team's got a minor league system issue or a problem. I just look at the opposite. They are developing players at such a rate that they're leaving their minor leagues kind of without that kind of talent that leads to these high rankings. You don't want to be in the top 10 every year if you're not winning championships or being in a position to do that. But rankings are fun to debate. Look, the Cubs went from 26th to 16th, so they are in a position now to say, hey, we are improving our farm system, but right. those are fun. And I think the Sox are doing what they need to do to develop players at that.
I think it's great, though, David, that people are paying that much attention to the minor leagues. And the sophistication of Chicago fans about their minor league teams and in general in baseball is something that's really, really great to see and understand, because of the fact that they've just, you know, they've taken their view to another level now of watching players as they come, watching the systems. They've been trained that way by a team like the White Sox that had to go all the way down to come back up, and the Cubs, who are now in the midst of something similar, where they're not going all the way down, but they're increasing their load of minor league players and young players who were in other organizations via trade. So I think, you know, the Cubs hope to be in the same spot the White Sox are in within the next couple of years.
From minor league debates to major league problems, we will go to New York, talk to Bob Nightingale from USA Today about today's talks between the Major League Players Association and Rob Manfred and his team. Next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane.
Youch. Did he have any hot sauce?
Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's Disney refreshing!
Pitching Ninja put out a little comp video today of you just excited getting strikeouts to end innings, and it gave us all the good baseball vibes we needed, Lance.
No, I hear you. If the owners don't want to get the league going, that should get them pumped up for the season right there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should show over them.
We'll just send it out. Just send it to the negotiating table tomorrow.
Man, they'll come to their senses, right? I hope. I think.
That's the plan. That's the plan. I think everybody wants to play. We'll get it done.
Lance Lynn yesterday on the Parkins and Spiegel show, giving the owners something to think about, putting a little pressure on publicly. Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. And it's time now to go out to our guest hotline, sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. That's where we find Bob Nightingale, the fine national baseball writer and columnist for USA Today. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Yeah, I'm wondering, David. Morning, Bruce. Good.
What's at stake today, and how do you think that Rob Manfred's approach could possibly change the way that we are viewing this work stoppage by the end of today?
Well, I don't think anything will change at all today. I think it'll still, you know, little increment here, you know, from the owners, and it'll be the unions. The union will be disappointed, and they'll come up back with their counteroffer next week. MLB will be disappointed. So this can go on for a little bit, at least for a few more weeks. I don't think they're going to come out public ever and say spring training is delayed, because people already know that. But, you know, the next big public thing will be, okay, the first week of spring training games are canceled. The second week of spring training games are canceled, that sort of thing.
Bob, when are we going to stop hearing the rhetoric of players saying we're in solidarity with owners, taking more time to make offers? I mean, you and I have been through a lot of these over the last 35, 40 years. When do you get the sense that they will just sit down and start hammering something out? Because we're running out of time here. This next week, I think, is a crucial week for Major League Baseball.
Yeah, there too. I don't think today is anything really. I think, you know, so much is made out of nothing. Beginning next week and the week after, you know, they got to get a deal done by February 28th if they want to start the season on time. If they don't start the season on time, then the question is, are those games just gone forever? Do they try to make them up in doubleheaders? Do they move the season back a week or two? MLB has made it sound like those games will be canceled forever because they don't want to move the season, drag it into mid-November. So, you know, that's going to be another missed paycheck for the players and missed money, too, for the owners with the TV rights and attendance.
So when Rob Manfred said on Thursday after the owners' meetings that he planned to come today and make a good proposal, was that just simply rhetoric, Bob, or are they coming down or compromising or more willing to compromise on some key core economic issues?
I think what they'll do is just, you know, make movement on every core economic issue. It won't be what the union wants. It's not like they're, you know, going over the, if a compromise is $50 million, it's not like they're going to go over that or do whatever the union wants. So I just think it'll be, you know, incremental on every issue. Then the players will, you know, come back. You can come back next week. Let's see if they go incremental too, or if there's someone. You know, no one has taken a giant step yet. And, that's not going to happen today either.
Bob, are the sides in agreement on what the major issues are? And can we at least let fans understand that they are in the process of talking about the deal breaker issues, and that the secondary issues, the ancillary issues are going to be easy to hand out? Because, you know, as one of my baseball friends always asks me, how come we're not hearing anything about the rules? The game itself needs to be, you know, tinkered with to make it more exciting. We hear it all year long. And once we hear these negotiations start, we don't hear anything about the rules anymore. We're hearing about the DH, that they're agreeing to that. But, pace of game and all the things that really matter to both sides and the fans really doesn't seem to be an issue.
Yeah, I asked about that, Bruce, and there's been no talk at all about that. It's almost like let's get a deal done first and then worry about gutter stuff in the future, you know, 2023. I think they're so worried about just getting the season off, that sort of thing, that they're going to work about the economic things. You know, I still think the minimum salary, I don't think it's that big a deal. They can reach a compromise there. And I do think the big thing is just reaching a compromise on how much the 0-3 guys will make. You know, the unions don't want, you know, 2 years of service time or your arbitration eligible. If not, you know, finishing top 7 WAR of your position, that sort of thing. But that's, you know, to get a year's service. So I think the 0-3 thing is the biggest thing. You know, I don't think the draft lottery, going from 3 picks to 8, you know, they can compromise at 5, you know, that sort of thing. So I think it's a 0-3 class that would be the big stumbling block at this point. But they all, you know, they're at least making compromises or, you know, doing some stuff on the 4 or 5 major issues. So, you know, it's not like the union says, we're not going to make a deal unless you give us 5 years of service time for free agency. They're staying at 6, and I think we'll still stay at the 2+ for the arbitration guys, but somehow some kind of mechanism there where it's easier for players to get 2 years of service time if you're a star player. It's really pretty much going to be the Chris Bryant rule. They bring up Chris Bryant in every single meeting.
So, Bob, if
Bryant
you are...
Actually,
go ahead.
Sorry,
Bruce.
David. Chris Bryant actually got 4 years of arbitration because of that. And the Chicago fans got 7 years of Chris Bryant being in Chicago. So there is a perspective to look at from time to time, too, as well. Yeah, and it actually worked out well for Chris. You remember he had a down year in 2020. So if he was a free agent, I'm not sure how much he would have got. So at least he got the, arbitration money, that sort of thing. But, yeah, I mean, I don't hear anybody's name being brought up at all except for Chris Bryant. So I do think they'll call it the Chris Bryant rule.
So, Bob, you're being more realistic than optimistic, today about what's at stake. And you have covered these in the past. So as you read between the lines and you look at the calendar and you know that, boy, it's getting late here. And what is your best prediction, your most educated guess about where this is headed and when we could, you know, possibly hear some sort of signs of a breakthrough?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see a breakthrough for at least another 10 days or so. I mean, even several people said they haven't begun negotiating yet. And, the back and forth today, I don't think will, you know, amount to anything either. You know, just a little bit more, you know, a little bit of tiny progress. But I think the big date's February 28th. If they don't have an agreement by then you're talking about, you know, missing some regular season games. Because everybody's saying, well, they need 23 days of spring training during the COVID year, and that wasn't quite enough. So they're saying, you know, they need 28 days. So that gives you all of March. But even if you have an agreement by February 8th, it's going to be a scramble. I mean, for guys to show up in spring training, guys to get their visas, let alone all the unsigned free agents.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Bob, it takes a week to get into camp, a minimum 5 days, but for most people, a week. Nobody has their housing, okay? So, you know, that in itself is a disaster for the clubs to be able to get that for everybody. It takes at least a week. How long do you think it's going to take for guys to scramble and get free agent deals? That's probably an ongoing process for over a month. And, how do you look at your team knowing you're going to have a universal DH now in the National League setting up who you're going after in that free agent market? And then, as you said, Bob, visas for 31% of the players they don't all live outside the U.S., but a lot of them, and especially a lot of minor leaguers as well, how are they going to get into camp in time? So there is a time issue, and I think it's more next Sunday, February 20th, than it is the 27th or 28th. I think that's really the time that will determine if a deal is done by then, whether or not the regular season is going to be delayed.
Well, I mean, I think they're banking on it, at least with the COVID season, guys that quit working out and that sort of thing. You couldn't do it. Now I think it's back to normal. At least guys are working out. I don't think there's any way in the world they can get a deal done by next Saturday. That's why, you know, going to the end of the month. You know, I think the hitters, position players will be fine. You know, maybe we'll see. If it's a short time, maybe baseball says, okay, you get three extra pitchers or, you know, three extra players in the month of April. You know, something like that to appease the union and to help reduce injuries. I'll be fascinated with the free agent market because I think it could be a horrible time for some free agents because if you're a club, you're going to make some offers and a guy can't be patient and say, I'm going to sit around for a month and wade through it. It's like, okay, you take this deal right now or we'll go to the next guy. And I think some panic will set in, particularly for the pitchers. You know, we've all seen when these pitchers show up late to camp or miss spring training entirely, they've been terrible. You know, remember when, you know, Kimmel joined the Cubs late, a bunch right. of those closers. When Greg Holland, you know, did the same thing, he was terrible. You know, these guys need some live action. So it's really important for the pitchers to sign those free agent contracts real fast, even before the position players.
Bob, before we let you go, I wanted to commend you on the column that you wrote last weekend in USA Today. In light of the Brian Flores lawsuit against the NFL, the class action lawsuit, you say that Major League Baseball, it shined a light on what was not happening in your sport. And I think when you look at the last 17 managerial openings, and there has not been a black manager hired, and then the last 15 executive openings, there has not been a black general manager hired. I feel like you shined a light where it needed to be. And a lot of this conversation that we're having about the NFL on this Super Bowl weekend, I think you could apply it to Major League Baseball. I just wonder what kind of feedback you have gotten in the past week along those lines.
Yeah, you know, the feedback you usually get is from, the black returning the game, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, hey, when Brian Flores says about the NFL, you know, it's nothing that, you know, you got nothing on baseball. I mean, you're talking about, you know, we've only had four executives hired since, or three executives hired since Kenny Williams in 2000. You know, talking about 22 years now. You know, that's a joke. And then all the talk about, you know, Black Lives Matter and, you know, all the jams standing up with, you know, science and stuff like that. And no one hired a black executive, you know, in a key role to run a baseball operations department, stuff like that. You know, Theo Epstein says, hey, we're going to make changes here. You know, Theo left the Cubs, but, you know, still nothing there either. But, yeah, it's a, you know, baseball, I think, is, you know, way, way ahead of, I mean, football is way, way ahead of baseball. You know, it's hard to imagine there's only 15 black managers in the history of the game. And nothing changed. I mean, since 2015, all we had is a, you know, Dusty Baker and Dave Roberts. That's it.
Thanks for your time today, Bob. Good luck covering the story out in New York, and we appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, get us a deal done. I know you have the juice, Bob. Get a deal done for us, would you?
Give me a couple of weeks, Bruce.
All right. See you in spring.
Bob Nightingale.
Bob, take care.
From USA Today. Thanks a lot for your time. And Bruce, yeah, you hope to see him at spring training. He's less optimistic than some reports and some national guys are in covering this, but I think it's a dose of realism, perhaps.
Well, I don't, you know, I'm hoping Bob's wrong. He's got great instincts. He's covered these, you know, these negotiations almost as long as I have, going back to the early 80s. And, you know, there's a sense that you get, David, and the sense that I get is until the posturing stops and we don't hear from the Bigfoot reporters on every move that's made that's leaked out for 3 or 4 days in a row, when you get that type of silence and you know they're negotiating, that's when a deal will be cut. That's when it'll be struck. That's when it'll get done.
When a deal is struck, boy, what a wild frenzy that will ensue after that, because teams will be scrambling to fill needs, sign players, and get their rosters complete, and that includes the Cubs and the White Sox. We'll talk about what that means and who that could mean coming to town and what both teams will do in Chicago next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Chicago Sports Radio 6-7 The Score. David Hall, Bruce Levine here until 11 o'clock. Welcome inside the clubhouse, brought to you by Aloha Restoration. Call Aloha for all your water, fire, and mold needs. And Bruce, we talked to Bob Nightingale, not entirely optimistic about a deal being reached or progress being made this weekend. But when that deal is made, there's going to be a frenzy for free agents, maybe trades, a lot of other player movement. How do you think that most directly impacts the Cubs and the White Sox?
Well, the Cubs need a shortstop and a center fielder, as well as some pitching. Okay, so you can go anywhere with starting pitching. They might need one or two. They need a lot of bullpen help. They don't have a lot in the bullpen. So they're going to have to go that direction. As far as position players, is Correa the guy? I mean, we heard a lot of conversation about it before the lockout. We heard that that name was someone that they were considering for a long-term deal. Maybe not the 10 years that he wants, but indeed maybe a 7-year deal. Is that where the Cubs go? I think at the very least, the Cubs have to get a guy that can play the position, whether it's Simmons or Iglesias, two free agents that are out there that are really good defenders. They need someone that can solidify that position. If Nico Horner is not ready to fulfill that need at shortstop, they have a big problem there. And we know Nico has great ability, but has had trouble staying on the field because of injury. So with that in mind, they need a big glove man there. They need a glove man in center. Tampa has Kevin Kiermaier, one of the best defensive center fielders in baseball, available. He's under contract for $12 million in 2022. He is not a fit for Tampa any longer. They will do their best to trade him. They will do their best to eat some of that contract. That might be right up the alley for the Chicago Cubs in a short-term deal for arguably one of the most the best defensive center fielders in the game. Not a great hitter, not going to hit you a lot of home runs, but he's somebody that'll solidify your defense.
Interesting nugget. Doesn't his brother work for the Cubs and the grounds crew? Is that is there a connection there?
I'm not sure about that.
So, Bruce, quickly, does a condensed calendar favor give leverage to the player or the team when you're talking about these deals being struck?
That's a great question. Initially, the first thing you think of, oh, the team, they're going to get bargains because everybody's going to be rushing to get any deal that they can. That might be the case. But when you're talking about Rizzo, you're talking about Nelson Cruz, you're talking about Bryant, you're talking about Correa, they're not going to necessarily take a short-term deal just because they want to get in. That's not going to happen. So for the great players, the very good players, they're still going to have to get paid. If it takes 2 or 3 weeks to get in, they're going to have to work out on their own. But I don't think you're going to get a great deal on Correa just because time is short getting into spring training.
I wonder what Ron Coomer thinks of that. We can ask him next inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Would you look at that? It's time for some of our favorite Snapple Real Facts. Real Fact 1433, toe wrestling is a competitive sport. Real Fact 732, the chicken is the closest living relative of the Tyrannosaurus Rex. And Real Fact 1599, a man once ate an entire airplane. Youch. Did he have any hot sauce? Yeah, so anyways, this has been a refreshing break brought to you by Snapple. Real tea, real juice.
With Snap's, it's refreshing!